Hello, I'm Dave, a reader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, the 11th of November, 2020.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have Mina, Edward, Helen, myself, Rob, David, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. In Sightloss News, we have a look at the issue of e-scooters and pavement parking. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, and On This Week in History with Flashback Roger, an interview with ex-Slade frontman Noddy Holder, and of course, the weather. But to start, we open with the speech given at Wolverhampton's Remembrance Sunday service by the 91-year-old Fred Bunce, the chairman of Wolverhampton's central branch of the Royal British Legion.
In 2020, we pay tribute to the men and women of the Second World War generation, and to those of today's who have served and sacrificed to defend our nation. We remember the collaboration of the Commonwealth and allied nations who stood shoulder to shoulder then to secure our freedom, and the communities coming together today to protect us all. This year, we remember then and reflect on now. We remember the service and sacrifice made by so many peoples, communities and nations 75 years ago. And we reflect on the service of sacrifice of so many today. We remember all members of the armed forces who did not come home, whose final resting places are in many countries around the world. We remember too the seafarers, members of the Royal Navy, the Merchant Navy, and civilians who lost their lives at sea, and their final resting places are in the oceans in all parts of the world. We also remember civilians who lost their lives when the war was brought to their homelands. Remembrance Sunday gives us an opportunity to remember them. And as we leave this place today, it brings to mind the lines of a song. Where have all the soldiers gone? Where have all the soldiers gone? Gone to graveyards. Everyone, when will we ever learn? When will we ever learn? The challenges of leaving, missing, and returning home are still faced by service families today. Let us take with us those three little words that mean so very much, lest we forget. They shall grow not old, as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, or the years condemn. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we will remember them.
Thank you.
That was Fred Bunt at Wolverhampton's Remembrance Sunday service. Coming up next, we have some Black Country news, brought to you by Angela, Ian, and first up, Christine.
Almost half of close contacts of people with coronavirus in the Black Country and Staffordshire are still not being reached through the test and trace system amid a record number of new positive cases. Data from the Department for Health and Social Care shows around 52,000 people in the region should have been contacted by the test and trace service between May 28th and October 28th after coming into contact with someone with coronavirus. Contact tracers ask new patients to give details for anyone they were in close contact with in the 48 hours before their symptoms started. But more than 20,000 people were not contacted or failed to respond, which meant they were never told to isolate. Before the new figures were published, Justice Secretary Robert Buckland said the month-long lockdown that began in England on the 5th of November will be used to redouble our efforts to expand the NHS test and trace programme. He said, "It is also vital to increase the speed at which test results are returned. Lots of people are receiving them the next day, which is good, but there are still too many people who are having to wait for days, and we're going to continue to work to speed that up."
Buildings in the Black Country and Staffordshire are being earmarked to host a mass vaccination against coronavirus. The NHS has tasked councils in the Black Country and Staffordshire with identifying centres where people can be vaccinated. Pharmacies and GP surgeries are being lined up, and it is understood that due to the large scale of the operation, public buildings will also be used. Scientists are in a race to get a COVID vaccine ready before Christmas, with ministers believing it is the only way to get Britain out of its current cycle of lockdown and other restrictions on personal freedoms. Clive Wright, the COVID regional convener for the West Midlands, said the NHS was in the early stages of planning for vaccine delivery. The race for a vaccine has become more pressing due to the increased strain on hospitals, with Birmingham's Queen Elizabeth Hospital cancelling all non-emergency procedures after a spike in the number of COVID patients. David Lawton, the CEO at Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, has previously vowed not to cancel non-COVID procedures, and last week opened up a new coronavirus ward at New Cross Hospital to meet demand. He said there was now a real problem with a bed shortage in intensive care, and warned that if COVID patient numbers continue to rise sharply, then cancelling heart and cancer surgery would be the only fallback position.
Business leaders in the West Midlands have welcomed the government's decision to extend the furlough scheme until the end of March. They say it will give struggling businesses some breathing space and help them to maintain their staff during the uncertain months ahead. Black Country Chamber of Commerce Chief Executive Corinne Crane said it was really good news for businesses in the region and gave them some stability. "We have been campaigning hard for an extension to the furlough scheme, so today's announcements are very welcome. Extending this until March will allow businesses to plan and feel they have a safety net for their employees. We now need a medium-term plan over a similar time period that covers all the support that businesses need, particularly around cash flow and especially to those who have been excluded from support so far." The Confederation of British Industry's chief economist, Rain Newton-Smith, said, "The Chancellor has built a bridge for businesses to spring 2021 and taken much-needed steps to help firms across the UK survive this winter. Extending the tried and trusted job retention scheme will give companies the certainty and stability they need to help safeguard thousands of jobs into March. Sectors and supply chains under the greatest strain may need more tailored support in the coming weeks."
More than £23 million worth of cuts could be made in Wolverhampton next year unless the government provides further financial support, council chiefs have warned. It comes as leaders in the city have called on the government to fully fund the costs incurred by councils and commit to a solution by early next month. Councillor Louise Miles, Cabinet Member for Resources, said, "We are forecasting a really challenging time with cuts of more than £23 million to the local services our residents depend on next year without additional government money. The emergency £26.1 million already provided to us by government will already have been spent by then. Councillor Ian Brookfield, leader of Wolverhampton Council, said councils required every penny of government money promised to them. Funding provided by government so far to tackle the pandemic is welcome. However, we forecast considerably more will be required to deal with the ongoing impact of the crisis, which will be felt for years to come.
A burglary gang has been targeting pensioners across the Black Country, with some being held down as the crooks search their homes. Elderly people have been targeted by the gang in at least 15 distraction burglaries committed in the last 2 weeks across the Wolverhampton, Sandwell and Walsall boroughs. The men have been posing as police officers, waterboard engineers and gardeners to trick their way into the homes in a similar manner to a gang which struck 29 times in 10 days in the autumn of last year. Once inside, the men are distracting victims while accomplices search rooms for cash, jewellery and other valuables. During one break-in on the afternoon of October the 22nd, they gained access to a back garden in Greenwood Road, Walsall, by claiming to be carrying out water pipe maintenance. The residents returned from a shopping trip to find their patio window smashed and a safe stolen containing cash and personal documents. The burglars are understood to be white men with Irish accents who are taking advantage of COVID-19 by wearing surgical masks to protect their identity. We need residents to be alert to the threat and for people to share our message with elderly family members, friends or neighbours, said Sergeant Frensham. People out there will know who is responsible. I would urge them to do the right thing and get in touch. They are stealing from old, vulnerable people and do not deserve any protection.
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, back with the latest news from the Beacon Centre. Firstly, we wanted to say that we hope you're all coping okay with the second lockdown. There's no doubt it's tough for everyone, especially with the colder days and darker nights. Don't forget though, that if you think you need any extra support, please get in touch. Beacon can help. You can always ring us on 01902 880 111. On the subject of lockdown, you may be aware that in line with the latest government COVID-19 guidance, which has come into force recently, our shops are now temporarily closed. We'd like to thank everyone who shopped with us or donated to our stores in recent months. Each purchase or donation has helped support people with sight loss in our community. We'll of course update you when we hope to be able to reopen, but we already can't wait to welcome you back. We'll certainly need people's support more than ever, as we've already lost almost £700,000 in the wake of a pandemic. That's due to our shops already having to close earlier this year, as well as the fact we've had to cancel many of our face-to-face services and fundraising activities. And while your donations to our stores have been really warmly received, while they're shut, we ask kindly that nobody leaves donations outside any premises. If you've got a query about our shops, you can give us a ring. It's 01902 880 111. Now, on to some brighter news. You may well remember a couple of months ago that we told you about our amazing member Leslie, who got her knitting needles out for a lockdown knitathon in aid of Beacon. She managed to raise almost £250 to help support others with sight loss while knitting scores of scarves, and we're delighted to tell you that 20 of them have now been distributed amongst homeless people across Wolverhampton. Well done, Leslie. You're an inspiration to all of us here at Beacon. We so appreciate your support and we're thrilled that your scarves have been put to good use. If you've got an idea to help us raise vital funds to support people with sight loss, get in touch. You can email us at supporters@beaconvision.org. Did you know that November marks Trustee Week? We've taken the occasion to say thank you to our wonderful board of trustees here at Beacon who do so much to help us thrive. Like all of our volunteers, they give up their time to support our charity and use their skills to help make a difference for people with sight loss. We're actually currently looking for new trustees and we'd love to hear from people with a specialism in fundraising or marketing, charity retail or digital inclusion. To find out more, you can head to our website www.beaconvision.org/jobs. That's it for this week. Don't forget, there are now more ways than ever before to listen to our talking news. You can do so via Alexa. Just ask your Alexa-enabled device to play the Black Country Talking News. By telephone, ring 01902 213 210. Visit our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, or head to the British Wireless for the Blind app. Take care, everyone. See you soon.
Thanks very much, Helen. More local news now from Christine and Ian. But first up, it's Angela.
A number of Dudley Council services and venues have closed after the coronavirus lockdown came into force. The Prime Minister recently announced a month of restrictions that would require people to stay home, restrict gatherings, and force the closure of certain venues and businesses. The restrictions will be in place until at least Wednesday, December the 2nd. As a result, Dudley, Hales Owen and Crystal Leisure Centres have closed, as well as the Dell Stadium, Dudley Museum at the Archives, the Red House Glasscombe and Sycamore Adventure. The Dementia Gateways, Queen's Cross Network, Assisted Living Centre, Dudley Carers Hub and the Unicorn Centre will also be closed. In the meantime, parks and open spaces will remain open for people to enjoy their daily exercise while adhering to the latest guidelines. Cemeteries will be open, and funerals with up to 30 people at burials and 16 people in the chapel at Gornal Crematorium will still go ahead. Adult and community learning classes will still be available and bin collections will run as usual. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "In the last 8 months, Dudley residents have shown resolve in the face of the virus and helped keep the number of cases lower here compared to other parts of the Black Country and wider West Midlands region. But we've reached that point again when we all need to dig deep and pull together for the greater good."
A local butcher stepped in to help needy families during half term by giving out more than 150 food parcels, inspired by Marcus Rashford and the late Wolves owner Sir Jack Hayward. De Halls in Wolverhampton, which has been in the city for 27 years, offered bags filled with chicken for people to come and collect from the store on Dudley Road. The scheme ran all last week. Jasser De Hall, aged 44, said, "What Marcus Rashford did opened everyone's eyes to a real issue in our communities. As a local business, we felt it was important for us to help look after families in need in our own area. In all, we gave out more than 150 bags, which we hope made people's lives a bit easier over the week. No one wants to see kids go hungry." Wolves fan Mr. De Hall said he also took influence from the Molyneux Club's former owner, Sir Jack Hayward, who he said believed in looking after your own. De Hall's will remain open during the lockdown.
Campaigners are calling on Dudley Council to buy and build badly needed homes on a Hales Owen site, which has become a magnet for crime and fly tipping. Local residents want the land on Atwood Street to be redeveloped after 6 derelict terraced cottages were demolished in 2016. They have now launched a petition calling on the council to use its powers of compulsory purchase to provide housing and improve the area. Resident Daniel Bevan said, "This land has been left to go to waste for as long as I can remember. Residents are quite rightly frustrated at the amount of time this land has been derelict. This is why I launched this petition, because the only people with the power to do something about this are Dudley Council. If they compulsorily purchase this land, they can build 5 or 6 much-needed homes for people who really need it." The campaign is being supported by Councillor Simon Phipps, who has launched an online petition, while homes will get delivered copies to sign. It will remain online until the end of December, after which it will be presented to the Council's Planning and Regeneration Department. The petition can be found at tiny.cc/Atwood Street.
More than 100 people gathered at a popular park in Sandwell to release balloons as part of a funeral, despite the COVID-19 rules. The group of around 110 people gathered at Swan Pool at Sandwell Valley Country Park in West Bromwich on Saturday, officers said. Around 30 people are believed to have attended a funeral at Sandwell Cemetery before they met around 80 others outside. The group headed off towards Swan Pool and the meeting lasted a short while despite officers' efforts before it dispersed. Force Incident Manager Steve Radford from West Midlands Police said, Officers attended and every effort was made to disperse this gathering in line with COVID regulations. The gathering continued for a short while before it dispersed. We understand that this is a deeply distressing time for bereaved families and friends, but there are restrictions on the number of people permitted to attend funerals to protect everyone from the spread of COVID-19.
The Green Waste Collection Service in Dudley is to be extended for 1 month to make up for missed collections earlier in the year. At the start of the lockdown in March, Dudley Council took the decision to postpone the green waste start date in order to ensure household waste and recycling collections could continue with a reduced workforce. The authority has now announced it will be adding the two missed collections scheduled for April to the original collection programme. It means that some households will now have collections going into early December. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "We reluctantly took the difficult but correct decision earlier in the year to postpone the introduction of our green waste collections so that we could safeguard household waste and recycling provision for our residents. I am really glad that, as promised, we're now able to add those two missed dates to the end of the 2020 schedule, allowing us to help residents who are having a final clear-up of their garden ahead of winter. For residents, this means that following their last scheduled green collection on their calendar, they will have another one on the same day in 2 weeks and 4 weeks' time. Green-fingered residents can still order discounted compost bins to recycle their garden waste into useful compost for their garden, and details can be found at dudleyrecycles.org.uk.
More local news coming up, but now it's time to get your thinking hats on, as it's time for the flashback quiz. So Mina, do you have the questions?
I certainly do. Is everybody ready? As always, all the answers are included in Flashback Rogers This Week in History feature, and I'll be back to reveal whether you were correct. Here are this week's questions. Question 1. In what year did the USA almost retaliate to a mistaken nuclear attack? Question 2. What was the name given to the first test tube baby? Question 3. What was the name of the man who found Dr. David Livingstone? Question 4. What was Remembrance Day originally named? Question 5. What was the time on the Hill Valley Town Hall clock when it struck by lightning? And finally, question 6. What was the original filling of the sandwich when it was invented in 1718? Good luck!
And Mina will be back with the answers later, but now we have more local news, being kicked off by Ian.
Dudley Zoo will lose out on £170,000 in vital income during the November lockdown. A heavy blow for the popular attraction after being forced to close during the first wave of coronavirus in the summer. Zoo Director Derek Grove says while staff have come to terms with closing the Black Country attraction for the month of November, he says they need to be allowed to swiftly reopen come December with no delays in order to survive. Only essential shops, schools, colleges and universities can remain open, meaning millions of businesses will be forced to close down for 4 weeks. But for Dudley Zoo, which can't shut down completely due to the hundreds of animals needing care on site, the financial impact is huge. Mr. Grove said, "It's hardly a surprise, to be honest. It's something we've been expecting for the last few weeks, a lockdown. It's the time of year where we tend to be quieter, so we won't have as deep a financial impact closing in November as we did over Easter and summer, where we relied on visitors. But it will still have an impact. If we can help slow the spread of COVID, then we will do. We will just have no income coming in, so it will mean more losses for the zoo. If it's just for November, we can live with it. But the frustrating thing last lockdown was seeing other businesses we deemed higher risk reopen before us. We're open air, and it's very easy for people to just walk around. You can meet fewer people than in your local park. Currently, the main priority is that our animals don't feel like they're leading a lesser life during these periods of lockdown. The care we provide has to continue 365 days of the year."
a memorial statue commemorating the bravery of the 19th century Sikh soldiers is set to be created and placed at a Wolverhampton temple. The Guru Nanak Gurdwara in Well Lane, Wensfield, is looking to unveil the Saragari Monument, which will be sculpted by Black Country artist Luke Perry of Industrial Heritage Stronghold. It is celebrated as a great last stand, as it saw 21 soldiers of the 36th Sikh Regiment in a fort surrounded by thousands of tribesmen who chose to fight to the death. To this day, the Indian Army's 4th Battalion of the Sikh Regiment commemorates Saragari Day every September the 12th. Members of the Gurdwara approach the authorities about the proposed statue, and the committee is expected to transfer land between Wensfield Library and the temple on a 99-year peppercorn lease. A plaque will also be placed at the memorial, which will read, "In tribute to the 21 men of the 36th Sikh Regiment, whose bravery became part of history at the Battle of Saragari, 12th of September, 1897.
Car parking charges have been suspended on all council-owned car parks in Dudley. Dudley Council took the decision to help frontline staff travelling to work and shoppers getting essential supplies during the new lockdown. However, the measure only applies to town centre car parks. The measure will be reviewed regularly. All other parking conditions, including time limits on short-stay car parks, will still apply during the period. Council bosses have urged people to only leave their house if absolutely necessary, in line with government guidelines. Councillor Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Public Realm, said, "In these times of uncertainty, we want to make it as easy as possible for people travelling into our centres, whether they are frontline workers or people shopping for essential supplies. We took this approach earlier in the year when we were in the height of the lockdown, and now is the right time to introduce it once again. It will reduce the risk of spreading the virus through people not having to touch the machines and get tickets. I would stress, however, that people only visit our centres and use the car parks if absolutely necessary. We are about to go into a period of time where once again people need to stay at home to stay safe and bring down the virus transmission rates."
Wolverhampton Grand Theatre determined to bring curtain up next month despite the second national lockdown. Only last week, the historic city centre venue revealed plans to bring socially distanced shows to the stage after being given more than £100 million in funding. The first performance will be an evening with Kevin and Joe Clifton, the ex-Strictly Come Dancing brother and sister duo, on December the 6th, and will be followed by several film screenings in the weeks after. Adrian Jackson, CEO and Artistic Director at Wolverhampton Grand Theatre, said, "We are still planning to reopen in December for our socially distanced season, unless told otherwise by the government. The season launched last week and sales were fantastic. Our audience clearly can't wait to be back."
An elderly Albion fan who's been in isolation for 9 months due to coronavirus has been left overjoyed after Slaven Bilic wore a poppy she crocheted. Joan Taylor from Cradley Heath has been shielding since March while waiting for a hip operation. Before she could have that procedure, though, the 78-year-old needed to undergo surgery to strengthen her lower spine. That operation was delayed multiple times due to COVID-19. So, to keep herself busy, Mrs. Taylor crocheted 160 poppies, some of which were donated to the club for Remembrance Day. And she was then left overjoyed when she spotted Bilic wearing one during Albion's game at Fulham. "My wife is an excellent sewer, but because of her back pain, she couldn't get on the machine, so she decided to crochet some poppies," Joan's husband Harry said. A friend of ours, Mark Whitehouse, donated some to the Royal British Legion and some to the club. "Joan has been in quite a bit of pain since the operation, but we put the football on and there was the manager wearing one of her poppies. We couldn't believe it. Within a few minutes, our daughter rang. Then my son rang, saying how amazing it was. It was fantastic. After that, we couldn't watch the football. We just kept trying to spot Slaven."
Our final news roundup is on the way, plus news from our local football clubs before the international break. Now, however, we have news of campaigns by the organisation Sight Loss Councils concerning e-scooters and pavement parking. Brought to you by Edward.
The organisation Sight Loss Councils, which advocates for blind and partially sighted people across the UK, is warning the increase of e-scooters as well as the cluttering of pavements, shared space schemes and pavement parking are threatening the safety and independence of visually impaired people. In response to this, Sight Loss Councils has launched its Streets for All campaign to raise awareness of these challenges. The campaign will shed light on the issues through case studies, national surveys and engaging directly with politicians and local authorities. Mike Bell, Public Affairs and Campaigns Manager for Sight Loss Councils, said, "Blind and partially sighted people face huge challenges every day to access our public spaces. For example, new street redesigns for social distancing measures, tables and chairs cluttering pavements, cars parked on pavements and the increased use of e-scooters. The government needs to ensure the safety and independence of visually impaired people are considered and that streets are designed for all of us." The first phase of Streets for All campaign is to focus on the issue of pavement parking and the increased use of e-scooters. The Department for Transport has recently approved specifications for the legal use of e-scooters, which are faster, heavier and have greater acceleration than in all other European countries. They also operate quietly, making it difficult to hear, and it may not always be obvious to someone driving an e-scooter that they are approaching a pedestrian with visual impairment. This makes interactions between the two potentially dangerous. Claire Williams is from Smethwick, and she has a form of macular degeneration. Claire is very worried about the introduction of e-scooters. She said, "I nearly got taken out by an illegal e-scooter in a local park. E-scooters concern me because I can't hear them coming. Another time, an e-scooter almost ran over my guide dog, forcing her to jump out of the way. They make me feel vulnerable when I'm out and about." Sight Loss Councils, funded by Thomas Polkington Trust and led by blind and partially sighted people, work closely with businesses, charities such as Beacon, transport hubs, local politicians and other service providers to improve access to services for visually impaired people at a local and national level. Mike from Sight Loss Council said, "We recognise the environmental benefits of e-scooters, but these need to be made safer. We are calling for a change in government guidance on e-scooters to include audible signals, a lower speed limit and geotagging restrictions to prevent pavement use. Another issue of concern is that of cars parked on pavements, as these are also putting blind and partially sighted people in real danger, as they are often forced to step into the road to avoid cars. On this issue, the government has already launched a public consultation asking whether pavement parking should be banned and what powers local authorities should be given to challenge individuals who park their cars on pavements. If you would like to have your say on this issue, you can take part in the government consultation by visiting tiny.cc/pavementparking. Responses must be submitted no later than the 22nd of November 2020. Alongside this, Sight Loss Councils has also launched their own national survey asking for people's views on their experiences surrounding e-scooter use and pavement parking. You can find out more about their campaign by visiting www.sightlosscouncils.org.uk/streetsforall.
Thanks a lot, Edward. Very interesting stuff. Now we have our final local news roundup with Angela and Ian. But first up, it's Christine.
A hoard of rare Star Wars toys and memorabilia fetched more than £250,000 at a Black Country auction. The valuable lot, which consisted of thousands of items, came from an elderly couple in Stourbridge. Incredibly, some of it was almost thrown away. Among the pieces that were sold was a Palatoy vinyl cape Jawa toy and card set, which fetched a world record £22,000, said Chris Aston, who ran the auction. The items were sold at Aston's Auctioneers in Dudley, which had its best ever auction in 15 years of trading. The elderly couple acquired the Star Wars items from their neighbour, who left them his belongings in his will after he died. The items had been left in bin bags, which helped to keep some of the items in good condition, including the toy cards. Every room in the house was filled with Star Wars items. Mr. Aston estimated there were thousands of individual items. Other toys that were sold included a set of 5 cards and figurines, including Yoda and a Star Destroyer Commander, which sold for £25,000. The total money spent in the auction was £410,000, where every item was sold. This 100% selling rate is known as a white glove sale in the auction business, Mr. Aston said.
The Dudley Canal Trust boss is hopeful that their Christmas event can go ahead in light of current lockdown restrictions. CEO of Dudley Canal and Tunnel Trust, Tracy Dix-Williams, has said that while November is usually the attraction's quietest month, December is busy with Christmas events. She hopes the boats can get back on the water as soon as December begins, so that visitors can enjoy Christmas magic in the tunnels. Around 2,000 gifts have already been prepared to hand out during the trips. The Trust secured funding of £309,000 from the Cultural Recovery Fund earlier this year, which has given it much-needed boost during difficult times. But Mrs. Dix-Williams said the income during December helped carry the charity through January and February. She is worried about lockdown lasting longer than just 1 month. She said, "We're very lucky that we secured some funding from the Cultural Recovery Fund. Of course, there's no way it will cover everything, but it has given us a bolster so we can trade. We're in no way as dire a position as some of the other places near us. We'll be closed for November and we really hope we can open for December as we have our December events on."
Volunteers have spoken of their heartbreak after having to close a museum days after it reopened. Tettenhall's Transport Heritage Centre underwent a refurbishment after being closed throughout lockdown, including spending £20,000 on replacing 100-year-old windows. The museum in Henwood Road, Wolverhampton, was opened on October the 31st by Ned Williams, a local historian, but later that day Boris Johnson announced a new lockdown. "It was heartbreaking news when Boris announced we would have to close again," said Alex Brew, curator. "Being free to enter, we rely on donations and what we sell in the shop to fund our operations and capital projects, and we only had 2 days to showcase our greatly enhanced facility. We'd like to thank all those visitors who have contributed over the years and are just sad that you won't yet be able to see just what you have helped to pay for." The Heritage Centre will hopefully reopen in December if and when the new lockdown ends.
Work on a new £18.2 million leisure centre in Dudley is taking shape. New aerial images show the steel structure for the building is nearing completion and the beginnings of a large swimming pool can be seen inside the building. It is hoped that the new Dudley Leisure Centre at Constitution Hill will be finished by early 2022. It will include a 25-metre, 8-lane swimming pool and a teaching pool with spectator provision. There will be a 4-court sports hall suitable for indoor football, badminton, a 100-station gym and fitness suite, 2 group exercise studios and a cycle studio. Councillor Ian Kettle, Cabinet Minister for Regeneration and Enterprise, said, "As residents will no doubt notice when they pass it, work is progressing nicely on the new leisure centre site. I can confirm it will continue during the second lockdown with COVID-19 safe working practices in place. We are on track to open to the public in early 2022. The plans are part of a wider major regeneration programme bringing over £1 billion of investment to the town centre. Dudley Council, which is funding the project, hopes to have the facility open ahead of the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham.
Pupils at a school in Brute have been painting giant poppies around the school grounds to remember those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Students at St Dominic's Grammar School, based in Brute, have painted the poppies directly onto the grassed playing fields to create a poignant image of remembrance. Peter McNabb, head teacher at St Dominic's, said the project formed part of the pupils' learning about Remembrance Day and its importance. He said, "We always give a lot of focus to Remembrance Day and what it means, with pupils undertaking a range of activities to support their learning. The giant poppies are stencilled onto the grass at various places around the school and act as a striking reminder of the sacrifice made for our freedom and liberty."
Sports still to come, but now we have the man with all the facts. It's Flashback Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we take a look at some events that happened during the week of the 9th to the 15th of November of past years, and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On November the 9th, 1979, NORAD notified the National Security Advisor of the USA that the Soviet Union had launched 250 ballistic missiles towards the US. NORAD's computers then placed the number of incoming missiles at 2,200, and Strategic Air Command was notified and nuclear bombers were prepared for takeoff. However, a few minutes later, satellite and radar systems determined that the attack was a false alarm. The training scenario had accidentally been loaded into an operational computer. Well, all I can say is, oops. On November the 10th, 1977, the first test tube baby, Louise Joy Brown, is conceived. The process known as in vitro fertilization, IVF, actually took place in a petri dish, not a test tube. Her sister was also conceived through IVF 4 years later. On November the 10th in 1871, Henry Stanley finds Scottish explorer David Livingstone in Africa, prompting the famous query, "Dr. Livingstone, I presume." The following day, on the 11th of November in 1919, is Remembrance Day. But when it was first observed in 1919 throughout the British Commonwealth, it was originally called Armistice Day. From 1921 to 1930, Armistice Day was held on the Monday of the week in which November the 11th fell. But then in 1931, a bill was passed by the House of Commons, which changed the name to Remembrance Day. The first Remembrance Day was observed on 11th of November 1931, and since then, the day has been always commemorated on the Sunday of the week containing the 11th of November, which of course is our Remembrance Sunday. On November the 12th, 1955, according to the movie Back to the Future, the Hill Valley clock in the town hall is struck by lightning at exactly 10:04 p.m. Doc and Marty would use their knowledge of the event to power the DeLorean back to the future. On November the 13th in 1718, John Montague, 4th Earl of Sandwich, was born. This English diplomat, after whom the Sandwich Islands are named, and who was the inventor of the humble sandwich, he devised it as a quick meal to allow him more time to gamble. The original sandwich was a piece of salt beef between two slices of toasted bread. Nowadays, of course, anything goes. Well, that was a simple one this week. Hope you had your old pin back, and you have a good time with the quiz. This is Rod saying ta-ra for now. Ta-ra.
Thanks, Roger. Don't forget, Mina will be back with the answers to the flashback quiz. But for now, she's here to tell us about the weather. So, Mina, how's the weather looking?
The weather is settled and cloudy for most of the week, with the odd shower expected. Light winds will be blowing from a southeasterly direction, and you can expect very moderate temperatures for the time of year, hovering typically between 12 and 15 degrees, with low UV levels all week. The sunrise and sunset times are 7:26 a.m. for the sunrise and 16:19 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 13th of November, while it's unlucky for some, weather-wise, we have light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. On Saturday, 14th of November, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. Going into Sunday, 15th, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. Now, Monday 16th of November should be a lot drier with light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. Tuesday 17th of November we have again light cloud and a gentle breeze, but it should be a little bit warmer with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. Wednesday 18th of November seeing the return of light rain with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. And finally, Thursday 19th of November, we return to light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 11 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. Enjoy the weather.
I will do, Mina. Sounds like I got the chance for a nice ramble out in the countryside this weekend. Now, with news from our local football clubs, here's Ian.
Nuno Espirito Santo admits he has mixed emotions, as the vast majority of his Wolves squad are set to head out for international duty again. All but a handful of his squad will go away with their respective countries amid a new protocol. Players only able to train again with their clubs once negative for COVID-19 via the league's testing regime, instead of being cleared by their countries. When asked if having so many internationals makes him proud or worried, Nuno said it's both. It's the joy of having so many players being called up by their national teams, as it's huge for them and huge for us as a club. At the same time, it's a worrying moment due to the situation we are living in. Living in a pandemic, your players go away to a different environment, you lose control of them. Then you have to deal with the protocol when the players are coming back with testing. But some players come on a Tuesday, another on a Wednesday, another on a Thursday. If they cannot train before they are tested, how are we going to do that? So it's a question for the Premier League. Meanwhile, Wolves are understood to be relaxed on reports suggesting new FIFA agent regulations could highlight a conflict of interest between the club and Jorge Mendes. It has been said Mendes will have to prove his work does not fall foul of proposed rules that will outlaw conflicts of interest, such as club owners having stakes in player agencies. Wolves owners Fosun have been reported to hold a stake in Mendes' agency via a subsidiary, which would be breaking the new rules. Football's world governing body has said that fans will be able to see how much agents earn from transfer deals when the new regulations come into force next year. They will include a licensing system, character tests, commission caps, and the publication by FIFA of the money agents get from their clients, both players and clubs. Agents will be consulted between now and the spring of 2021. Wolves' unbeaten run was brought to an end as VAR came to the fore yet again in a 1-0 defeat to Leicester. Nuno Espirito Santo's side, who had a goal chalked off in both games against the Foxes last season, fell to Jamie Vardy's dubiously awarded penalty at the King Power. Given for a handball by Max Kilman after a lengthy review, Vardy slotted home before seeing another spot kick saved on a frustrating afternoon. Wolves pushed for a leveller late on, but lacked guile and ruthlessness and head into the international break on a losing note. All in all, though, a disappointing outing, and you hope Wolves, who have picked up 13 points from 8 Premier League games so far, can reach another level fairly soon. They currently find themselves 9th in the Premier League going into the international break. Sam Johnston says the difference in quality between the Premier League and Championship is vast, but the goalkeeper is adamant Albion are adapting. The Baggies have found the going tough since winning promotion to the top flight, with Slaven Bilic's side yet to win in 8 outings, drawing 3 and losing 5. Arguably the worst defeat came at Fulham, with Bilic's side outplayed by another promoted team struggling at the wrong end of the table. Yet Johnston insists the team is still moving in the right direction. Fulham wasn't good enough, but the previous 2 games we had played well and built some momentum, the keeper said. People have to understand that our team is adapting to the Premier League, having just come up from the Championship. The quality is miles apart. It's so much better. There's a lot of learning and improving to do. But it's early days and we have to dig in and keep on fighting. There's a lot more to come from us. Johnston admits it's nice to go onto social media and read positive comments from fans, with those messages boosting his confidence. I've had to make saves, but ultimately that is what I'm here to do. I love making saves, the keeper continued. But to then see people going out of their way after a game to message you and say well done and nice things, it's really nice to read, to be honest with you. There have been points where I have had not so nice messages, but I think that's the way the world is now, especially when you're a footballer. A late gasp goal from Harry Kane broke Albion hearts after they outplayed Tottenham, only still to be beaten 1-0 at the Hawthorns. Prior to kick-off, Jose Mourinho's side had been heavy favourites to overcome Slaven Bilic's men. But it was the Baggies who put in an outstanding display and who dominated the majority of the game. Eric Dyer had to clear from just in front of his own goal line, with Carlin Grant waiting to pounce following an excellent Callum Robinson cross. Dara O'Shea and Darnell Furlong both went close with headers from corners, while Conor Gallagher hit the post with an excellent snapshot from 25 yards. Over the course of the 90 minutes, Spurs created very little, but right at the end, Kane nodded in a cross from Matt Doherty. It was a soft goal to concede, with Kyle Bartley and Sam Johnston making life too easy for England's skipper. And it meant all Albion's hard work had been for nothing, with Mourinho's side taking the points back to London. The result has left Albion in 18th place on 3 points going into the international break.
Thanks for that, Ian. Now we have a catch-up and brief biography of the ex-Slade frontman, Noddy Holder, brought to you by David.
He was one of the faces of the 70s. Today, the Slade frontman speaks candidly, both of his fond memories of that time as well as his regrets. Though Noddy Holder quit Slade in 1992, he remains their biggest draw. the frontman synonymous with a band who were as big as the Beatles by 1973. Today, he's at home in Cheshire, and he's been self-isolating since March. At 74, he can't afford to take chances with his health, so he dutifully mows the lawn, plays his guitar, spends time with his wife, Susan, and keeps himself to himself. I haven't been out much. I've been going out for walks, but I've got to protect myself at my age. There's been gardening and reading, box sets, and his guitar. I play every day. And his guitar has been alive with the sounds of the 1940s and 1950s. He's been playing jazz, country, and bebop, just as he did when he started. That's where I started. That's how I learned. I'm going backwards. It's been good in that respect. I've rediscovered my roots. A couple of years, I did a tour of the Deep South in America, a road trip, which I hadn't done for a long time. When I first discovered rock and roll, it was 55, 56 with Elvis, but my big breakthrough was Little Richard. When I first heard his records, I flipped. I liked a lot of the black artists like Big Joe Turner. Noddy would go and watch films at the Savoy Cinema in Warsaw or the ABC. He was too young for some of them, but his neighbour, who worked on the fire door, would let him in. He saw the film The Girl Can't Help It with Little Richard and Eddie Cochran, and when he walked home, he knew he wanted to be a rock and roll star. Little Richard had his shiny silver suit and big pompadour haircut. The thing that struck me was that he stood up to play the piano. It had never happened before. It was like an epiphany for me. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a rock and roll star. I wanted to learn guitar and form a band, which I did. Noddy lived on the Beachdale estate, and across the road was a pub called the Three Men in a Boat. He'd watch gigs there when he wasn't playing himself. I loved the applause. Once I'd got a taste of being a rock and roller, it's all I wanted to do. He did his O-levels, and his teachers pushed him towards university or college. They wanted him to be a teacher, an accountant, or bank clerk, a profession that was safe, steady, and secure. I told them I wanted to be a musician, but that was taboo. You were the black sheep or an outcast if you had ideas like that. His parents, Jack and Leah, supported him. They were scared for him that he wouldn't earn a regular wage, but they didn't put obstacles in his path. Jack was the window cleaner at Noddy's school in Bloxwich, and the teachers would give him grief for not sending his son into an office job. They'd go mad at him. It wasn't until I had hits in 1971-72 that they relented. His mum, bless her, didn't really understand it. She didn't think singing was a proper job. She'd always say, "When are you going to get a proper job, Neville?" The penny dropped in 1996 when Noddy was collared by Michael Aspel on This Is Your Life. She adored Michael Aspel. She thought he was the bee's knees. That's when it clicked with her. When I got my MBE in 2000, I think she realised I'd done something with my life rather than just peeing about in a rock and roll band. Noddy was a grafter. You had to be if you wanted to succeed. Nothing changes. That's still true now. I was a control freak, and I used to give the rest of the band a list of rules. They weren't allowed to see the audience before a show. They had to set up their equipment in a certain way. There was no lounging about. Noddy was always on the money. When the band had no cash, he'd clean windows to buy guitar strings. I'd do people's gardens. I always needed dough for the petrol for the van or a new valve for the amp. We never made money doing gigs round the pubs. We'd spend it on hire purchase. You'd pay it off each week. After some work with a TV presenter called Steve Brett, Noddy met Don Powell and Dave Hill, who had their own band. They asked him to join them, but Noddy said no. Don thought Noddy sounded like John Lennon and was keen to sign him up. But Noddy had his own band and was earning a fortune, £25 a week, doing gigs in Germany. A few years later, Noddy had left his band and he met Don and Dave in Wolverhampton outside Beatty's. They asked if I fancied joining them. We went in and had a cup of tea in Beatty's. At that time, they'd auditioned for a new bass player and got Jim. Noddy scheduled a rehearsal at the Three Men in a Boat across from his mum and dad's house, and everything clicked. It was the birth of Slade. They got a manager, Chas Chandler, who had overseen the career of Jimi Hendrix, the world's greatest guitar player. He produced and managed the best guitar player in the world. He wanted to find a nitty-gritty rock and roll band. He put us in this gig in New Bond Street at Rasputin's Club. He came down the stairs halfway through our first set and the audience was literally dancing on the stage. Chaz couldn't believe it. The rest, as they say, is history. Four Black Country kids had the world at their feet within a year or two. We started getting success, but we grafted 5 years for it. We'd been doing five nights a week, sleeping in the bloody van on Shap Fell when there was snow, fog and ice. We'd park up on the top of Shap, huddled together for warmth. It didn't happen overnight. We trod the board for years and years. The fame came out of the blue, but we enjoyed it. Travelling first class around the world, having the right old time. You've got to do that. You've got to let rip after all them years of struggle. At the peak of their fame, Don nearly died. He crashed his car 4 days after a colossal gig at Earl's Court. For a while, it looked like the end of the band. We were at the height of our success. People were travelling on the tubes, dressed in top hats and mirrors. It was like aliens had landed round London. Then, 4 days later, Don had his car crash. They only gave him 24 hours to live. His dad called me at 4 a.m. in the morning. I was sleeping at my mum's that night. He told me Don had had an accident. He was tearful. He told me he'd only got 24 hours to live. It was a bolt from the blue. I went up the next day with his brother. They'd shaved his head and he'd got a huge gash on his head when he'd been thrown through the windscreen. His girlfriend Angela died when she'd gone through this windscreen. His car was like a tank, a huge Bentley. But it was concertinaed. His memory was totally shot. They got through it and had a second coming in the 1980s, after a storming gig at Reading Festival. But the dynamic had changed. Noddy had once hung out with Don, but never much with Dave and Jim, other than when they were recording or playing. We didn't socialise. We were very different characters. The 1980s should have been a time of having a second bite of the cherry, and we should have been enjoying it. But for some reason, it wasn't enjoyable. People wanted different things in the band. People wanted more control. I've always said what splits bands up is five things. Egos, we had four of those. It's money, that's a big thing. Drink and drugs, women, and the inevitable creative differences. And in Slade's case, it was probably all five of those things at some stage. That's not just normal for Slade. That's what every single band on the planet goes through. Some bands survive it. Slade didn't. They'd lost gang mentality. Noddy quit. Jim followed him out of the revolving door. Don and Dave limped and made good money. But even Dave fired Don last year. A sad end for a sensational band. A one-legged dog that ought to be put out of its misery. It was a total shame. I regret it now even. It's the one thing in my life that I regret. There's nothing else in my life I regret. Even my career after, I've loved it all. For 25 years, I worked with the same guys. 24/7, that's hard. It's a regret that we can't get together round the dinner table with our missuses and laugh about the old days.
Thanks, David. Now, did you get the answers right to the quiz earlier? Well, it's time to find out. So, Mina, do you have the answers ready?
Yes, I have. So, how did you get on? Let's find out. Question one. In what year did the USA almost retaliate to a mistaken nuclear attack? It was 1979. Question two. What was the name given to the first test tube baby? Louise Joy Brown. Question 3. What was the name of the man who found Dr. David Livingstone? And the answer here is Henry Stanley. Question 4. What was Remembrance Day originally named? And the answer here is Armistice Day. Question 5. What was the time on the Hill Valley Town Hall clock when it was struck by lightning? The answer here is 10:04 p.m. And finally, question 6. What was the original filling of the sandwich when it was invented in 1718? And of course, it was salt beef. More flashback on This Week in History next week. And now we end this edition of the Black Country Talking News with an update from the Queen's Cross Network.
Hello everyone, my name is Paul Astley and I work at Queen's Cross Network. Queen's Cross is a vibrant and busy community-based hub in Wellington Road, Dudley. The hub provides support to people who have a physical and sensory disability and who live in the Dudley Borough. This covers the areas of Central Dudley, Sedgeley, Coesley, Briley Hill, Kings Winford, Wordsley, Stourbridge and Hales Owen. At the current time, the hub at Queen's Cross is closed to attendees and visitors owing to the COVID-19 lockdown situation. However, we are offering a service called the Pleased to Meet You helpline. This is a friendly support helpline aimed at helping people who live in the borough and who may need some support with shopping, medication, access to some other support services such as fault prevention and telecare, or if people are just feeling lonely and isolated and need someone to talk to. They can talk to us, of course. To give you an example of some of the other things we can help with, we have helped people to contact someone who could repair household appliances like washing machines if they break down, or maybe even help to contact a dog walker for pet care. Whatever the request, if we can reasonably help, we will try our very best to do so. If you feel our team of adult social care staff could help you in any way, then you can call the Police to Meet You helpline on 01384 812761. That's 01384 812761. Or you can email us at communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. That's communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. There is no E at the end of the word serve. communitysupportserve@dudley.gov.uk. The Pleased to Meet You helpline is open Monday to Friday from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. We would like to hear from you. In fact, you could say we'd be pleased to meet you. If you'd like to know more about services that we offer at Queen's Cross Network, please visit www.dudley.gov.uk and search for Queen's Cross Network. Or you can Google Queen's Cross Network Dudley. Alternatively, if you use Twitter, you can search hashtag Queen's Cross Network, all one word, and learn about the exciting things we offer to people who have a physical and sensory disability at our fantastic centre. You can contact Queen's Cross Network through the Pleased to Meet You helpline or by calling 01384 813460. That's 01384 813460. Thank you for listening. My name's Paul Astley, and from everyone at Queen's Cross Network, I wish you all well and hope that you will stay safe.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!